Support for this podcast of The Exchange is brought to you by the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. That's imagine.dh.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Along with the usual New Year's resolutions to lose weight or quit smoking, many Americans also vow in the new year they'll improve their money management. And this time of year, there's advice galore on how we can all spend less, save more, and reduce our debt. But just like the New Year's dieter who falls off the wagon by February, that January resolve to balance our personal budgets can be hard to maintain. One reason, compared to citizens of other developed countries, we Americans don't save very much, either for unexpected expenses or for that dream vacation. And while some of that may be due to a consumer-driven culture where spending is encouraged and savings is not, there are other factors as well. Slow wage growth, pricey health care, and other costs that can make it tough to accomplish that heartfelt financial resolution from New Year's Day. Today in The Exchange, why many keep resolving to better manage their money and what seems to get in the way. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. Joining me in studio, Ryan Tufts, home ownership counselor at Home Team, a nonprofit that helps people buy homes. Ryan teaches seminars for prospective buyers and also seminars on general financial literacy. And Ryan, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Laura.
Also joining us from Michigan, David Flores, counselor with GreenPath Debt Solutions, a nonprofit credit counseling organization. David, good to have you too. Thank you for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
And joining us from New York, Ron Lieber, your money columnist for the New York Times. Ron's book is called The Opposite of Spoiled. It's a guide to teaching kids about money. And Ron Lieber, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me and happy New Year's Resolution Week.
Well, and to you too, Ron. And on that point, how common a New Year's resolution is this, Ron, to get a better handle on the finances?
I think it's extremely common. And, you know, it's not a big surprise, right? Just about all of us have areas of our financial lives, financial columnists included, that we could improve. And a lot of it is a function of complexity, right? I mean, we're lucky enough to live in a free society with free markets, and most of us like it that way. But with those free markets come all sorts of choices and an ever larger heap of responsibility that we all have for our financial lives. And unfortunately, with those choices come a lot of bad actors who would just as soon that we make substandard or ill-advised decisions. And so all of us probably have areas of our financial lives that could use improvement.
Wow, a heap of responsibility. What do you mean by that, Ron?
Well, here I think of the academic Jacob Hacker, who wrote a terrific book a decade or so ago called The Great Risk Shift. I mean, just look at health insurance, right? All of a sudden, we are all responsible for having it, whether we want it or not. And if we do not have it, as the front page of the New York Times notes today, we will be penalized by losing some of our tax refund or having to pay a fine to the government. And with that responsibility comes all sorts of really complex choices. Are you going to buy from the exchange? Are you going to buy from private markets? What are the prices? Are my doctors in the system? Does the directory for the system, is it actually up to date? Does my doctor even know what plan he or she is in? I mean, you could literally lose days trying to make that single decision alone, and that's on top of, you know, the dozens of decisions that we all have to make about our financial lives. It's the reason I have a job.
So around the new year, people take a deep breath and they say, okay, I'm going to get a better handle on this. What do you hear, David, from folks that you work with?
Well, you know, here at GreenPath,
part of the reason why we get a lot of people calling us after the holidays is because they probably spent a little bit too much during the holidays. Their Black Friday shopping and everything they needed to spend on for the their presents and all that. So people are calling because they want to try and get out of debt, and we do our best to try and figure out what it is that's coming in and what's going out. What are the minimum payments on everything from, credit cards, car payments, mortgages, even student loans. You know, student loan debt has surpassed credit card and car payment and car auto loans. And we're seeing a lot of people calling us because they're getting into trouble with student loans. So,
And speaking of spending, David, it's easier and easier and easier to shop, to spend these days, right? I mean, I remember when stores were closed on Sundays and you didn't have the internet, so you couldn't, decide you needed to go shopping at midnight.
Oh, yeah. You've got everything from, the primes online where you can get you go online, you can buy something and it'll be at your door in a day. Black Friday shopping is now starting at 6 o'clock on Thanksgiving evening. I mean, it's a lot easier to shop, and the economy has made a little bit of a recovery, which means that banks are loosening up their belts a little bit more, so that they're actually allowing people to borrow more than they had maybe in the past couple of years because of the recession. So yeah, I mean the banks are lending, and the consumers are using it up.
Well, and we'll definitely talk about credit card debt a little bit later, I think, for sure, because that's a big issue. But Ryan, to you too, your thoughts on the new year and people's financial resolve at this time?
Sure. Yeah, I think this is a time of year that people, they do set those goals, and sometimes they maybe get a little bit ahead of themselves. And I think taking the first step to really figure out what they want to do is key. Like, I've worked with a lot of people who are buying a home. So they come to our first-time home buyer class and get a sense of what they need to do. And oftentimes they're kind of surprised at really what's involved in that.
Really?
So I see a lot of folks who it turns out that they do need to work on their credit report to improve, or pay off any past delinquencies or correct any inaccuracies on there.
Well, and I'm glad you used the word goal, because I do wonder, when people say, I have a goal, Ryan, of better money management. I mean, what does that mean specifically? Do they mean save money for a house? Do they mean knock out the credit card debt? Do they mean create a budget and stick to it? What do you hear?
I hear folks definitely, home ownership is still a big key for folks that they want to own a home. Other people mostly just want to get their finances in order, but they're kind of linked together. I think a big key is to set goals that are specific. So people have this broad idea of, I want to buy a home, or I know I need to save for my down payment, but they're really not sure where to start. So we really encourage people to be specific about your goals, be realistic. If you're not saving money right now, don't try to start saving hundreds of dollars a month. Do something that you can actually manage.
Well, and that's something that I've seen over and over again, Ron, when it comes to making any kind of New Year's resolution, whether it's losing weight or quitting smoking or whatever, but especially with finances, Ron, people say, don't just issue this broad mandate to yourself, save more or reduce my debt. Get specific.
Yes. And, in the world of lowering your debt and credit card debt in particular, some of the best advice that credit counseling firms and others have given out over the years, Dave Ramsey is big on this too, is a sort of snowball effect. You start small with a goal that's manageable and you build your way up. So in the credit card context, that means taking, if you have multiple bits of credit card debt on different cards, that means taking the smallest one first and getting some momentum going so the snowball builds. And the same thing's true with, big goals like spending less or saving more, right? You want to define it. And by spending less, maybe you just pick one category where you feel like you can make a dent, and trying to cut your drinking coffee out habit in half. Or if you're talking about saving, just save 1% more, one percentage point more. So if you manage to save 3% of your income at work through a workplace retirement plan or through an IRA, try and make that 4% this year. That's a manageable step. And over time, you can increase it another percentage point and build some real momentum and make some major changes.
One thing that I read too, Ron, is people say, I want to reduce my debt. A good idea sometimes, but Ron, with other types of debt, if you've got a super, super low rate, loan rate, maybe spending down your debt isn't worth it if you're doing really well there.
You know, the sort of good spending.
It may not be.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
If you have a mortgage that's at, you know, 3.5% or 4% and that's a fixed rate, so it's not like a variable rate loan that might change over time or change in 5 years or 7 years, that's a pretty good debt to have. Now, there are some people who just for their own peace of mind, just cannot handle having outstanding debt. It gnaws at them. It causes them to lose sleep at night. Or there are people who can't figure out what the best alternative is, or even though they understand intellectually the best alternative for any spare money is to invest it in stocks because stocks might earn 6 or 8 or 10% over time, whereas paying their mortgage off only effectively earns them that 3.5% or 4% that they would otherwise be paying on that interest. People just can't get over the idea of the risk of possible loss in the stock market over the short and medium term. So if making a different decision is going to cause you to lose sleep, then, you know, by all means, pay off your low interest debt. But just understand that it may not be the most economically wise decision, even if it happens to be the right decision psychologically for you.
Well, and I'll ask all of you in a minute about the pure economics and the psychology that Ron mentions, because that's definitely a factor. We're not all sort of rational economic actors. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. We'd love to hear from you this morning. If you've resolved this year or in years past to better manage your money, how did you tackle that problem? What tended to trip you up? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. We're joined this hour by Ron Lieber. He's the Your Money columnist for the New York Times. Also, David Flores, counselor with Green Path Debt Solutions, and Ryan Tufts, home ownership counselor at Home Team. Ryan also teaches courses on general financial literacy. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, joining us from Keene is Miguel. Hi, Miguel. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to add a bit of a micromanaging of debt and perspective as opposed to kind of the macro that you guys have been talking about so far. I have found that amongst other resolutions of losing weight and things like that, that eating out less per week will not only knock out a large amount of calories in one meal, but as well, on my fixed income, eating out is about 25% more of my monthly
food budget
in just one day, in one meal.
Yeah. So, Miguel, hitting two New Year's resolutions at once with that one. Thank you for calling. David Flores, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point. You know, when people call us, the first thing we do is we sit down and you know, organize a budget for them. A lot of the times, it's the first time that they've ever done it. And when we get down to specifics, including, you know, how much are you spending eating out, and they're surprised. People are surprised when they realize that sometimes they could be spending more eating out than they do on their actual grocery bill. So, you know, I think the caller hit it, the nail right on the head. You could, you know, dramatically reduce it's the money you're spending by looking at every single expense, not just the big expenses like the big mortgage payment and the car payments, but also looking at, you know, the miscellaneous expenses that you maybe take for granted, the $3 there, the $5 over there, start to add up over a course of a month, and you'd be surprised. You start directing that into a savings account, and you could, you know, knock out a New Year's resolution just by, you know, not doing something like eating out.
You know, Ryan, when you sit down with folks who want to buy a home, and you said there's sometimes some surprises when they look at what they need to do in their financial lives before they can jump in. How often do you tell people, Ryan, look, you got to set a budget? Because a lot of people would say, oh, really? Every little coffee and pack of gum? I mean,
that is the type of comments that we hear pretty regularly. Laura, but it's everyone needs to, frankly, for buying a home, you definitely need to have a good handle on your finances. And having a budget is a key step to knowing that you're financially stable. If you're not someone who's going to track your expenses every month, which I frankly do recommend, I at least recommend once or twice you're doing an expense audit where you go in and you catalog a whole month of expenses, down to the penny. You know, how much was spent on eating out? How much did I spend on miscellaneous? Which is sometimes where we run into a problem. Like, how do you categorize the expenses at Home Depot and Home Goods when it doesn't neatly fit into household or food? It's kind of tough to do. But if you can at least get that awareness of what your spending is, then you know where to make changes. If you just kind of blindly just decide, oh, I'm going to cut back on this, maybe that's really not where your problem area is.
Looking, you know, line by line, month by month, often reveals some surprises for folks.
Sure, yeah, and it'll give you some direction on where to go next.
How much do you think your average American has a budget, Ron Lieber? Everybody says they should, but how much do you think people really do it?
Oh, I think it's the vast minority of people who actually track it.
Good, I feel better
day,
now.
Expense by expense. It, you know, even with the rise of web-based and app-based systems like Mint and others that do allow you to track all and categorize all of your credit and debit card spending, it's still really hard. So, you know, a couple of ideas for people who are having trouble. If you find the idea of tracking every single expense distasteful, then, you know, look back at your credit card or debit card statement for the last couple of months and find the three biggest categories of discretionary spending, right? There's the stuff that you have to spend to stay alive, but look at the stuff that's discretionary and find the biggest categories and focus on one of those and see if you could bring that down 10% next month. And then see if you could figure out how to bring it down 10% the following month. And, you know, chip away at a couple of those. That's a manageable goal. Also, you know, in the context of saving for a home, absolutely budgeting needs to be a part of it. But one way to frame it psychologically comes from a financial planner I spoke with for a column last week named Jude Boudreau down in New Orleans. And he was sort of channeling Stephen Covey, who kind of put this a different way. And he said, you cannot say no without a bigger yes. So the bigger yes in this context is, I want to live in a home of my own someday. So how are you going to make that bigger yes part of your day-to-day reality? Are you going to take pictures from home magazines and paste them up on your computer so you're not tempted to buy things online? Are you going to send yourself pictures or reminders each day? Are you going to talk about how that'll feel? Making that bigger yes part of your day-to-day psychological life will probably make it easy to say no to things that might otherwise feel like deprivation if you weren't framing it contextually.
So you can't say no without a yes, but the yes is further
without
down the road.
A bigger yes.
Ron. Yeah.
A bigger yes than whatever the no is.
I wonder, David, what do you think? We Americans are said to not be very good at that. We want it all now.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, usually when we take a look at, you know, at GreenPath, our goal is to try and help people get out of the debt, right? And a lot of people are calling us more of a, not prior to getting into trouble, but maybe after, right? We are very much a reactive society when it comes to debt. Like, oh, crud, I got myself into trouble. It's time to dig out. And when we take a look at those statements, I mean, they're you know, small, which at the time seem insignificant charges that add up when you talk about the interest. And I know that we talked earlier about the lower interest debt, but, you know, more and more people are going back to using credit cards, and the interest on credit cards is not low. You know, it's amazing if I ever see credit card debt that's under 20%. So, you know, you pay $5 here, $5 there, you know, 20% on those $5, it adds up over time. So, yeah, I mean, we want things now, and we tend to get ourselves into trouble because of it.
What do you see, Ryan, in terms of people who, you know, it's hard to make that far away plan, that sort of bigger yes down the road?
Yeah, I definitely agree that that's pretty tough for Americans in general to kind of take on, because we do crave that instant gratification. But I think a lot of those, I really like Ron's point about that delayed gratification, saying yes to the saying no to something and saying yes to something that you even want to pursue even more. And that it's not easy to do. And I see a lot of people struggle with that. And really, once people do frame it that way, as Ron suggested, those are the folks that have the most success. Like, I have a couple right now that I'm working with, and they were living on inflated income, meaning they were using their credit card when really they were out of money. And now that she's so committed to buying a home, she's really cut back and she's so focused. She's paying down debts and she's been starting to save.
All right. We will talk more after a short break and take more of your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi. Today in The Exchange, many people make New Year's resolutions around personal finance and debt. We're talking about some of the issues around this, including what tends to trip people up when they resolve around the new year to better manage their money. Again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. If you've resolved this year or in years past to better manage your money, how did you tackle that problem? What tended to get in your way? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. And David Flores, I want to return to you because, again, with GreenPath Debt Solutions, as you said, you're really helping people who have maybe, you know, run into a tough situation or not made the best choices, and now they're in debt. They need your help to get out. Give us a sense of what gets people into that situation in the first place, because I'm guessing there's a bunch of reasons why.
There are. I mean, you know, at GreenPath, we're kind of like a one-stop shop when it comes to counseling. In 2006, the bankruptcy laws changed, which made it a requirement for individuals prior to filing bankruptcy to come talk to organizations like us to talk about the different options, right? Well, what can we do prior to filing a bankruptcy? Most people want to try and avoid bankruptcy, and so what we see is it varies, but it could be a combination of a couple of different things. One is maybe they bought too much house, right? So they're paying 50% or more of their income is going to their mortgage because they didn't talk to a housing counselor to come up with what they can afford. And so they're spending most of their money on their house, so everything else, there isn't enough to be able to support all of the other miscellaneous expenses, so they're using their credit cards as a result. So although the credit card is the end result, really it originated because of their housing situation. Most recently, we're seeing a lot more people calling us because of student loan debt. The people are graduating. They're not getting the jobs that they thought they were going to get. So they can't afford their minimum payments to their student loan companies. And so that's kind of getting them into trouble. And so as a result, they're needing to use the credit cards to supplement their income. So, everybody always looks at the credit cards as the problem, but really it's the symptom, right? There are other issues and we dive in to tackle kind of what is the root cause, and a lot of the times it's because there are other expenses that have caused them to force using those credit cards.
What about, David, sort of that, you know, the health crisis, and mm-hmm. you end up having to pay out of pocket because your insurance is scanty or you don't have any, or the car accident that maybe even wasn't your fault, but all of a sudden you have, you know, all these expenses. I met somebody over the holiday who was homeless because he'd had to have two shoulder surgeries, a lot of money out of pocket. Insurance didn't cover it all. He was out of work for so long because of the shoulder surgeries that he got fired. So there's sort of those types of situations too, and then it's hard to crawl out.
Yeah, and because I mean we see people that come to us with that medical debt, the past due medical debt that they were unable to pay out of pocket. And there are always bigger picture issues. It isn't just okay. I mean, you will get the situation where maybe somebody overspent, but that's not necessarily the norm. You know, most of the time it's because there is something else that happened that caused people to have to use their credit cards or have to get those loans. You know, that you have those payday loans that are getting people into trouble as well because they need to go to get a small amount of money for a short amount of time, but they're paying 100% interest on them, and so they get sucked into that. So the core issue is no savings and no budgeting. Right? They didn't save for the unexpected expenses. So when the unexpected expenses come up, they're forced to use these methods to overcome them.
That's an important point, too. Before we go back to our listeners, Ron, I want to ask you about that, too. We talked about As you said, the vast majority of Americans don't budget. But what about the savings, Ron? How often do people these days have that proverbial nest egg in case of an emergency?
Not very many of them do, and quite often it's not their fault. I agree that people should do everything they can to save whatever they can for emergencies. But if you're living hand to mouth, and even for people, you know, right at sort of the, you know, median household income level, it can be very difficult with all of the sort of expected, unexpected expenses that come up, you know, car repairs, health issues, immediate family members, say an aging parent who is in need. It can be very difficult to save much at all. And, you know, people also have trouble saying no to their minor children and their needs. And so I think part of planning, in addition to saving, is to thinking ahead to, you know, what would you do if you were in a really catastrophic situation? Have you talked to your immediate family and friends and sort of set up a loose network saying, you know what, if it comes to it, you can come to me for a low or no interest loan? Are you maintaining your credit as best as you possibly can so that you've got a credit card in reserve that, you know, is only at 6 or 8 or 10% as opposed to the 20% that we were talking about earlier, which is the normal interest rate for people who are already in trouble? Do you have access to some sort of line of credit somewhere? Do you know who the agencies are near you or your pastor or whoever heads your house of worship who can help? You know, having those contingency plans sort of thought through ahead of time may turn a big financial problem, or may keep a big financial problem from becoming a total catastrophe that could cause you to lose your home or be evicted.
How do you talk to folks about that, Ryan? The idea that, you know, I know it's tough, you're saving for a house, maybe you don't have that much money to begin with, but you got to have a little bit of a cushion to fall back on.
Right. It is a tough area for folks because, or what we really suggest is kind of having at least two pots for savings. One for those short-term expenses that you know you're going to have. Like every year, for example, we all have our car registration we have to pay, or a lot of us buy gifts for the holidays that we know we're going to spend that money. So if we can set some money aside from that in the short term, do that monthly. So when those bills come, it's a bit easier to pay. But at the same time, if you have plenty for longer-term goals like homeownership or retirement, still putting money aside separately from that cannot be touched if that short-term expense comes up.
Again, the phone number here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And all of you, let's go back to our listeners. Tanya's calling from Bedford. Hi, Tanya. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Oh, my God. This is like my favorite topic in the entire world.
Well, Happy New Year, Tanya. Go ahead.
This is a happy new year indeed. I love budgeting, but I have a spouse who doesn't always, you know, keep with the program. So what I found works in our family is I automate everything that I can, like, you know, the mortgage gets sucked out of the bank account every 2 weeks, da-da-da-da. But my husband gets and I get a cash allowance every week. And he's expected to cover certain of his line items, like his dry cleaning, his gas money, and the rest is Red Bull and donuts.
Red Bull and what?
Red Bull and donuts. Like we all need money that we can have personal economy over. You know, that you don't have to explain, like, oh, I bought a lipstick today, or I bought, you know, a latte or whatever.
So, but, yeah, go ahead.
But if that money, but you have to have a limit on that money. Because, you know, for most of us, money's not a finite, you know, it's a finite resource. We don't have, like, printing presses in our basement. So when you don't have a limit, everything becomes limitless. So having a certain amount of greenbacks in your wallet every month keeps it in check, and it's kept him from blowing up our budget.
Yeah, and if you have the cash, then you can more see what you're doing. Red Bull and donuts, that's great. What do you think, Ryan?
I love that. I love the caller's plan right there because if you're budgeting every item down to the dollar and there's no wiggle room for any of the Red Bull and donuts, then the plan's not going to work. It's not realistic because your budget is, it's not just numbers on in a database. It's, you know, it's your habits too. And it's very difficult to break those or to change those. So if you give yourself some type of freedom or wiggle room, you're setting yourself up for with a lot more realistic plan that's more likely to work.
Well, and I'm glad you called too, Tanya, because Ron, you write in your book, The Opposite of Spoiled, again, a guide to teaching kids about money, that money isn't just about economics. There's a psychology to it. And Ron, there's a family dynamic. There's a personal dynamic that you have to kind of work through. And it sounds like Tanya's found that happy medium. Good for you, Tanya. What do you think, Ron?
Yes, money equals feelings, as the great financial sage Carl Richards puts it. Carl, who writes for us on the New York Times website, he sketched out a really funny thing that I thought was profound last year. He drew a picture of a trucker hat, and the slogan on the trucker hat said, "No shame, no blame." And what Tanya's talking about here is just exactly that, right? She may not approve of the donuts or the Red Bull or the donuts and the Red Bull in combination. I don't know what that does to her husband's driving skills if he's getting that stuff at the drive-thru. But that aside, right? Emotion plays a big role here. You don't want to be bickering with your spouse or partner about these things all of the time. And so if you can set up a system where, you know, there are shared expenses that you pay out of a joint account, and then you have two separate accounts for each of the two adults in the household where they have dominion over what they spend there, and they can do it without shame and without blame, you will have a more harmonious financial relationship.
Well, and Tanya, again, thank you so much. And David, you know, getting a little more serious, again, you're working with people who are trying to get out of debt. I'm imagining this is a big stressor for couples.
Yeah. I've been doing this for a little over 10 years. And early on in my counseling career, one of the biggest things that really woke me up to the situation, specifically about couples, was I had an individual who came to me, and she, you know, she was very stressed. She was the money manager, and she had run up the credit cards to almost $50,000. And she came to me because she wanted to try and avoid bankruptcy. And when we came down to talking about her husband's knowledge, he had none. She had explained that he was kind of they were a dual income household, but you know, he just left it to her to handle the bills, and they just were simply not making enough to make ends meet. But he was somewhat contributing, or he was contributing to the issue, because he was overspending as well, and he was just counting on her to kind of pay the bills. So when she came to me, he had no idea. So you know, we set up a program called the Debt Management Program, where we get people out of the debt. But he needed to sign the paperwork as well, so we had to bring him in, and we sat him down, and we talked to him, and although he didn't know the extent of it, he knew that they were in trouble. He just chose to ignore it. And I think that was really an eye opener. And he actually thanked his wife in that meeting for really acknowledging that there was a problem and seeking help, because he would have never done it. Right. So yeah, it's amazing to know that does happen. But I think the biggest step is, you know, not being ashamed and talking to your spouse, especially as things are or before they get out of control, right? I think both were to blame. He knew there was a problem. She knew there was a problem, but neither one of them sat down and actually talked to one another to really come up with a game plan to resolve it. So,
well, it's interesting, David, and you know, you probably have degrees or a background in financial management, but you're kind of playing the role of family therapist there, aren't you?
Yeah, it was a little scary. Like I said, it was early on in my counseling career. I was not expecting that, but it really allowed me to kind of see the human side of it. People just, you know, they get into trouble for a lot of different reasons, and sometimes it's their fault, and maybe sometimes they could have done things a little bit differently. But in the end, you know, everyone's human, and I think we just want to be able to help those who are willing to get help. I think that's the big key, right? Are you willing to overcome the issues, whether it's, you know, it's New Year's, so whether it's a weight issue or a financial issue or anything else, as long as you're willing to accept the help, there is help out there to get.
Well, here's an email that came in from Io, who says, from what I understand, today's dollar just doesn't compute to the same amount of money it once did. Io says, when statistics show that most Americans live paycheck to paycheck, how can you really save money in any meaningful way? Isn't savings just a myth at this point? Io, thank you very much for the email. And Ron, I'll turn to you first on this one.
I struggle with how to answer that in a realistic fashion because on one hand, I know there are plenty of people at, you know, sort of the median income level who do manage to save 3 or 5 or 7 or even 10% of their income. But many of them are quite lucky. They're lucky that they work for an employer that has a workplace savings plan that makes it easy and seamless. Perhaps that employer even matches some of their contribution. These people are educated enough to know about the tax breaks that can come to them for saving. They are lucky in that they don't have any health shocks. Perhaps they work for a governmental entity of some sort where there are few, if any, layoffs. They have stability and perhaps even predictability in their lives, or they have discipline that is way above average, even if their income is average. These people are out there. There are millions of them, but are there tens of millions of them? Probably not. And so I understand the reason for the cynicism behind that question. Getting this right, having your financial life be on the straight and narrow for decades without interruption is a difficult thing to do in this environment in 2016 if you are only earning at the average amount.
So sometimes it's about your fortitude to do this, Ron, but sometimes it's just luck. You don't have a major health crisis, car repair, home repair, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I think it's more than I think it's more than sometimes. I think it takes a fair bit of luck. And then when bad things do happen to you, then it takes a fair bit of skill and also sometimes humility in asking for help in recovering from those situations in a way that doesn't set you back with debt or some other decision made in sort of a rash way during an emergency situation. So it isn't easy.
Well, Io, thank you for the email. And here's another email from Deborah. I'll throw this to you, Ryan. She says, could you please give guidance on how to negotiate with credit card companies for a lower rate? Sometimes these companies just won't budge, even with a better credit score. Deborah, thank you. I didn't even know, Ryan, that you could negotiate for a lower rate.
Yeah, that it's definitely not something that's easy to do because they're certainly under no obligation to do that.
Sure.
I have seen in the past where someone is, you know, the negotiation really is tough. I've seen a circumstance where somebody just wasn't going to be able to pay, and the company offered to close the line and, you know, just make set payments after that. But actually, I think maybe I sometimes would refer people to GreenPath in a situation like that, believe it or not.
Right. Well, okay. So, David Flores, after a short break, we will definitely ask you that as well. And thank you for the email, Mary. More on that in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, financial literacy for the new year. Around this time of year, many Americans resolve to become better budgeters, maybe to spend less, maybe pay down some of that debt. But it can be challenging. We're finding out why. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. If you've resolved this year or in years past to better manage your money, how did you tackle that goal? What got in your way? Maybe how did you get around it? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So, David Flores, again, just before the break, we were talking about Deborah's email wanting guidance on how to negotiate with a credit card company for a lower rate. I love your thoughts on that, too, David. And then I also want to hear from you whether you advise people to go with a debit card instead of a credit card.
Yeah, well, for the first part, yeah, I mean, it is almost impossible for you to negotiate directly with a credit card company because there is no obligation. And even if you can negotiate with one, you may not be able to negotiate with all of them. People come to GreenPath because that's what we do. We actually negotiate with credit card companies to reduce the minimum payment that you're paying and also reduce the interest rate that you're paying. We're not a debt settlement company, so you will pay back 100% of exactly what you owe. GreenPath has relationships with all of the credit card companies, where they are willing to reduce your interest rate and reduce your minimum payment while you are enrolled in a debt management program. And the way the debt management program works, very simply, is you make one deposit to GreenPath. We distribute the money to your creditors. The creditors will reduce your interest rate, reduce your minimum payments. But there's one very critical thing, and that is, the credit card companies will close your accounts. The credit card companies will not reduce your interest rate and then also allow you to continue to use the account. So if you are enrolled in a debt management program, it's because you have resolved to pay off your debt. And the other cool thing about the debt management program is that all creditors generally will work with us. So it's not like, okay, this credit card company is going to work with them, but not this credit card company. So it really helps. And generally, we're able to help people get out of debt within 5 years.
What about the idea of some people say, you know, credit card, there's, you know, it's too expensive, and then you end up with high interest rates, as you say. What about a debit card? Can you just do it that way and skip the whole credit card thing?
Yeah, I mean, if you – and see, that's the challenge, though, right? Because a lot of the times, going back to the whole budgeting, if you haven't budgeted for your paycheck, using a debit card may be almost impossible because not knowing how much you need to spend every single month – because with a debit card, it's real money. So if you're out of real money, you can't buy anything else, right? So most of the times, people are tapping into their debit card up until the fact that they can't any longer, and then they switch over to credit cards. Or some people use their credit cards with every intention to pay off the full balance at the end of the month, but that doesn't happen. So yeah, I mean, in an ideal situation, that would be great. You still want to have some form of credit, right? So that you can show the credit card companies, and really, when you're talking about your credit score and all that, that you can use it responsibly. It's just, you know, having that fine line.
All right. Well, again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Eric's waiting in Conway. Hi, Eric. Go ahead. You're in the air. Welcome.
Yeah, I'm the guy who has no debt. I'm the last guy.
You and Tanya.
Yeah. Now, here's my situation. So when you talk about savings, you've been talking about investment things like retirement accounts and that. But I look at having liquid cash, putting money in an FDIC, say, money market in my bank, which you can't get any interest on anymore, maybe 0.2%. But yet, I use my credit card just as a convenience to pay. I pay it off every month. But my credit card pays me to spend money. I get cash back. I get 1% on most things, sometimes as high as 5%. So now they're paying me to spend my money, but I can't get paid to save money. How did we get in this situation?
Wow. Okay, Eric, thank you so much for calling in. Ron, what do you think?
he points out a very interesting and, you know, mostly true situation, which is that the credit card companies continue to dangle pretty generous rewards in front of people to try and get them to spend more and eventually get into debt. So, you know, they've done the math. There are a lot of PhDs and statistics out there at credit card companies who know good and well that if you suck enough people in by giving them a frequent flyer mile or two or a penny back for every dollar that they spend, that some percentage of those people will spend too much and not be able to pay it back next month, unlike the lucky caller or the disciplined caller, as we should probably refer to him. Now, on the flip side of that, because of the sort of larger economic situation, banks have not been paying very much in interest. Interest rates just went up. Savings account interest rates, you know, will increase a little bit over time and have already in some instances. But they're not going to equal the amount that you can get by spending at the money at the credit card companies. Now, I am not encouraging people to, you know, save less and spend more and try and earn their interest through credit card miles. There are a number of good academic studies that show that when you spend on credit cards, you tend to spend more than you would if you were just spending cash. Now, that's on average. Our caller may not be in that situation. I use credit card rewards cards too, and I like to think that I'm not that person, but there's a decent chance that I am. And so you have to be honest with yourself and know yourself to try and be careful about your spending in that particular context.
Well, Eric, I'm so glad you called because your call raises sort of a bigger philosophical question that I wanted to ask all three of you. So here goes, and maybe you first, David Flores. You know, it is often said that American society makes it very easy to consume and borrow and less easy to save. What do you think, David?
I mean, it's true. And I think part of it is because we also are looking to do a lot, right? So whether it's spending, we want the biggest, the best, what's out now, and also in savings. So, you know, when we talk about the ability to save the inability to save, a lot of individuals think that saving means, you know, a huge percentage of your income. And in reality, you know, we think too big and we get caught up in what we can't do. It's just like losing weight, right? If you want to lose 50 pounds, you got to do it 1 pound at a time, right? And so I think that's part of the problem. And I think if we be specific and you look at short term, okay, what do I want to save this month, right? And be realistic, accomplishing those small goals will hopefully allow us to get out of this rut we're in about, you know, we want the biggest, the best. We want to have the biggest savings account. Sometimes the biggest savings account isn't attainable right away. It, you know, you need to start with a dollar before you can end up with a million, right?
What do you think about that cultural critique, Ryan? Again, American society makes it easy to consume and not so easy to save.
There's a lot of temptation out there for spending your money. Just looking at TV, for example, the middle class on TV is a lot more wealthy than the middle class that I see in New Hampshire. There's expectations that people have at holidays or to, you know, the classic line of keeping up with the Joneses. It's still very true. And now it's gadgets that everyone has the latest thing. Kind of building, I think part of the way to get out of that is delayed gratification, which I know we want it now, but if you put off some of these things that you want to have, eventually that the delayed gratification comes and it keeps coming. Like it doesn't, the savings that you're planting now or the things you're deferring, you're going to be able to buy things on a continual basis if you have stable finances, if you have that savings account built up and you have control of your money. It becomes easier as you go. So the beginning is the hardest. I would say each day gets easier after that.
Well, and what about when we talk about this mindset, what about post-recession, Ryan? I mean, you do also hear that people are more mindful of the need to not get overextended, that they could lose a job because we saw so much of that in the recession. We hear so much about student loans. So now we do hear parents and students being a little more particular about the cost and so forth. So I wonder where we're at now. Now, in terms of our mindset, are we shifting a little bit?
I think we may be shifting back towards the days of higher spending again. One way that I see it,
really,
is,
we haven't gotten more sober minded around this.
Maybe
out of
some
the recession.
People have, but I see that banks are very willing to lend on mortgages. I see sometimes them willing to lend more than people would choose for themselves. It's not a problem that the bank is lending too much money. They'll lend you usually as much as you can handle, and it's up for you to set those limits. So it is. Oh, it's tough to cap yourself like that.
What do you think, Ron? Where are we at now?
Well, I mean, if you look at the governmental statistics on this and you look at, you know, overall household debt as a percentage of people's disposable income, what you find is that those debt ratios are, in fact, much lower than they were in, say, 2007 or 2008 when they really did peak. They're about 30% lower than they were back then, and they have held mostly stable since 2012. That is not to dispute the fact that the availability of debt, the opportunity to spend and to borrow to do so, has not increased a whole bunch since we hit the bottom in 2009. That is absolutely the case. But there is at least some evidence that people are trying to keep control of their emotions and not take things too far. Now, you know, again, these are trailing statistics. It's hard to know what they'll look like, you know, in the next 6 to 12 months. But I think that's some cause for hope. And also, just to go back to your, you know, thesis statement that you put out there a couple of minutes ago, I think that's true. But I also think it's true that as it becomes ever easier to find more opportunities to spend money quickly, it's also become easier to automate good habits. If you just think about the little computer that most of us carry around in our pockets now, right? It's extremely easy to push the button on that phone and buy something and buy lots of things. But by that same token, it's also easy to install apps that can help you save automatically. Here I'm thinking of an app like Acorns, which works like this. Basically, every time you make a purchase on a credit or a debit card, it rounds that purchase up to the nearest dollar and then takes the difference and saves and invests it for you.
Wow.
So if you happen to be in a situation where you are not in debt and additional spending will put you further in debt and cause you to pay more interest, that might be one way to automate savings. Now, it's also very simple to just have a little bit of money yanked out of your bank account each month automatically and stuffed into a savings account or an investment account and do it that way so that it's, you know, gone before you have the chance to spend it on your debit card, and you just make a deal with yourself where you're not going to use credit cards and get yourselves into debt. So automation can be our friend, even in a world where there are ever more opportunities to spend more and spend quickly.
Let's take another call, gentlemen. Joe is in Portsmouth. Hi, Joe. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Yeah. My question is for all of the students that have accumulated debt through their undergraduate degrees and all of the debt that has been spread out across multiple different platforms, such as parents' loans, where students have the responsibility to pay back those loans, federal loans, and also private loans. What types of programs could students look into now in order to consolidate all of that debt, not just federally, but maybe in a private industry? And also, where do you see this debt? Do you see debt relief in the future in the next, say, 5-10 years? Where do you see that being in the policy field?
Whoa, Joe, thank you so much for calling. We've done whole hours, David Flores, on this student debt situation, but I'm glad he called. Just quickly, your thoughts on his question, David.
Yeah, I mean, so he two quick points, right? First, private loans versus federal loans. I mean, they're really two different animals. In all actuality, the private student loans, there are very limited. There are some options, but they're not as great as the federally backed loans. And to be honest with you, there already are student forgiveness programs available. You just need to know how to take advantage of them, right? So, you know, once somebody graduates, the first thing they want to know is, when is my first payment going to be for my student loan, and what that payment is going to be, and can I afford it? And generally when you graduate, you have more than one student loan hanging out there. And so consolidation is also critical, not just for peace of mind to know, okay, I don't have to make six different student loan payments every single month, but also because once you consolidate, you can take advantage of, you know, the student loan forgiveness programs that are out there, the income-based repayment programs that are out there, because, you know, there are programs that are out there. You just have to jump on them and take advantage. And again, I mean, information is key, and reaching out to those who can guide you in the right direction is critical. And, you know, at GreenPath, we can help do that as well. So,
well, and just last question for you, I think, Ryan, the best, easiest first step to take if better money management is a goal for the new year.
If better money management is your goal for the new year, I would say the first step is to know what you're doing it for. I mean, what are your primary goals here?
Especially for a home, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if that goal is to buy a home, please sign up for a first-time home buyer workshop. There's a full statewide listing at gonewhampshirehousing.com or a listing for Southern New Hampshire at hometeamnh.org. And you can get all the information you need so you can get on your way buying a house.
Get that financial literacy that, you know, you said earlier a lot of folks need before they take that step. How about you, Ron? Can you pluck out sort of one best piece of advice for New Year's resolution folks?
Sure. I would encourage people to increase automation in their financial lives in a way that allows them to both reduce complexity, like the number and amount of bills and paperwork that they're dealing with each month, so as to help keep them from making stupid mistakes where they forget things or they don't understand things or a payment isn't applied in the right way. There will always be accidents and there will unfortunately be emergencies a lot, but in the very least, set yourself up so things are simple and automatic to the extent that you're comfortable, and that way you'll at least be able to devote a little bit of less time, attention, and anxiety to managing your financial affairs, because inevitably other choices are going to crop up during the month or during the year that are going to cause you to need to, you know, think pretty hard and spend a lot of time on them.
Well, all of you, happy new year. I should say a happy financially healthy new year, perhaps, to all of you. David Flores, Ron Lieber, Ryan Tufts, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Daniel Rosinski-Larson. And I'm Laura Kanoy.